Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Here we go, Rusty. Another show, That's a bad intro, Rusty. Here we go, Rusty. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming out with another episode of The Suspendables. We come at you each and every week, me and a longtime NHLer, superstar, Russ Cortinel. Rusty, how are you, brother?
I'm good. My buddy Carl Fix in Regina is listening to the show, and he says, now you've gone from longtime NHL player to now I'm a superstar, so...
Well,
he was busting my balls over that intro.
I'm all about the charity, Russ. You know, yeah. You got to give a guy a little extra, right?
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Russ. What'd you end up doing? I mean, everyone tunes into this show. I get a lot of comments from people coming back at me going, oh my God, this Rusty. He lives like a fucking king, man. They saw pictures of your bar that your wife set up for you for, I think it was a Christmas gift, and the people you hang with and the golf course you play at. And a lot of them tune in to see, okay, I gotta fill this void that I have. I gotta hear what Rusty's week was like. And of course, we came through New Year's. What did you have, a big party, or what? You're a party guy?
No, because of COVID and living here in communist California, we weren't, you're not allowed to have gatherings.
Whoa.
You know, if you're in Oregon, you can smoke weed and do coke, but you can't have a party. Mike Shannon sent a funny note saying, never thought you'd be able to have a party. It'd be legal to smoke weed, but not have Thanksgiving together or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
To answer your question, we just hung out, Paris and I, and it was Dawn, who lives with us, and the three of us just ate and drank.
Very good. Well, we'll talk about a few things on the show today. The big story, of course, is the World Juniors are on. You played for Canada. Tonight is the semifinal game as we record, which always kind of makes this silly because this show comes out on Wednesday. I think we drop it. We record on, seems to be Mondays now when we do it. So the result will be out. However, Canada's playing Russia tonight in the semifinal game. The Finns are playing the U.S. Probably going to be a barn burner. They always are. Yeah. Canada, Russia. So that's going to tee off tonight, Rusty, if you're, so we want to talk about that. We got some questions from a bunch of people. We've started doing this a long time ago. Love them. Bunch of questions for Russ. And our shout outs, now they're getting big. Now we're getting a lot of people that I gotta do shout outs to. Thanks a lot for all your comments. I've been doing a new thing, Russ, called twalking. I think I talked about this last week. It's walking and talking with Jungle. And because we got a new website, Rusty, we want to invite everyone to check it out, thesuspendables.ca. All the shows are on there. You can go back as I think we're into over 80 shows now. And they're all on there, and there's great ones, bunch of guests. We're going to bring on more guests this year. So you can tune into all those. And I started listening back to a few of them, Rusty. We're funny, Rusty. they're pretty good. Larry Robinson seems to be a one that people loved. Kelly Chase was great. Rick Tockett, we seem to forget about it. He was fantastic on the show. Of course, we had the great one on. We had Pat Burrell on, MLB guy, Steve Lowry, PGA guy, now on the senior tour. So there's a bunch of stuff on there. We had your son on. How's he doing, by the way, Rusty?
He's doing good. Yeah, the Wheeling Nailers, they won their first game, and they had, I don't know, two or three overtime games. They are in every game. Their record's not great yet, but they're playing better. He looks good out there. He's playing with confidence, which is just freaking huge. See him out there handling the puck and making plays, and it's fun. You know, that's our weekends now. We pretty much watch him play Friday, Saturday. So
sure.
Yeah.
You bring that up about playing with confidence, Rusty. You're coaching. Okay, Rusty, you're coaching tonight, the World Juniors. You're behind the bench for Team Canada. What's that coach looking for, Russ? There must be some incidents or episodes that you're looking at players going, Jesus, this kid may be too nervous. He may have lost his confidence. I mean, I can't. It's almost to me, Russ, the pressure on these kids playing in international tournaments and events, it's almost unfair, it seems to me. I think back to even because we're such a hockey-centric nation here, there's the expectations of a player who shows a little bit of promise. Is through the roof, right? From his family to his buddies to his friends, and then further to his hockey league, to the city he plays in, to the province that he's from, the league, all that stuff. And it's got to be too much to bear, Rusty, for some kids, you know.
Well, if it's too much to bear, then I wouldn't want that kid on my team in the NHL going forward. I think you embrace the moment and you thrive in these moments. And I obviously nerves are part of it, but as a coach, I'd be really with these great players that are playing for any team, but let's talk about Canada and the US, I guess. They're the best of the best. And the coach is going to be looking for discipline. The players that are, what I've noticed in the past years watching, the players that are drafted versus the players who are undrafted, there's more at stake for the undrafted player trying to increase his depth chart as far as where he's going to go in the draft coming up that year or this year. Mm-hmm. And so those players I felt watching as a fan and a past player is that they were a little bit more selfish than the drafted player. And so that would, as a coach, would drive me crazy. You got to get everybody on the same page, discipline, and plan for the team and instead of yourself. And those are the biggest probably factors as a coach that's coaching these teams, is getting the players to play unselfish, play for their teammates and embrace the moment. Now, remember, there's no fans. So these young kids, when they get out in front of one of these 18,000 seat arenas full of fans in the past, those are first for them, first for playing in front of an audience probably that big. On TV around the world and on that stage. So the nerves can play into it, but after the game starts and you get rolling, they should end pretty quickly.
We take questions, you know, from the fans of the show and listeners. And one of the questions was sort of, I think you brought it up last week about one of the best motivational speeches that you heard, you know, who's were mentors of yours. This whole deal, Russ, the World Junior is different, than playing in a normal league, you know, where you got a bunch of games. So coaching takes on a different role. You're in that room tonight, Russ. What are you bringing a guy in to talk to them? What are you going to say to these kids before a one and done game tonight? What's the speech? What's the talk from the coach before they face off?
I think I just said it. I mean, discipline, playing for each other. And then this could be, you know, or we move on to the next game with the big game, to play for the gold medal, but we got to play this game to get to that next step. So let's focus on this moment and we just play as hard as we can. And let's focus on where we are right now, and hopefully everybody is pulling the same way, and we move forward. So I think that the coach just really has to get the players to relax, play their hardest, play with discipline, play for one another, and put their best foot forward and think of the team before themselves.
When you played, Russ, you know, anyone who's from Canada remembers where they were in the 1972 Summit Series when Canada played Russia and the thing came completely unpredictable. They mm-hmm. thought Canada would just whitewash the Russians, and of course they didn't. The Russians caught everyone by surprise, Russ. It's probably not as unpredictable, like I said, now than it was in the old days. You played with some Russian guys, obviously, Russ. Mm-hmm. What makes them so good, Russ? A lot of these Russian players, you know, when they come over here and play, is it their toughness? You talked about discipline. Anyone who thinks back to when Russia was so competitive, when they started becoming competitive, you know, they'd say, well, you got to understand, man, what these guys go through, mm-hmm. that it's their life over there, you know, when they get picked to try and play for Russia. What's your take on the Russians, Russie?
Well, the players that I got to play with, it was a way out and prosperity. I mean, they didn't have a lot when they were there. The guys I talked to, like especially Mogilny and I, became very close, and the rewards he got for being a great player over there, I mean, were laughable compared to what you got here. And then, you know, he comes over here and he can buy a brand new car, he can buy a house, he buys nice clothes. And so it was an escape from the lifestyle he was living in. And I think they've, because it was communism back then, it was just the focus. When you're good at something, they just, okay, that's what your main focus is. And that you're going to be the best possible player. And we're going to give you all the tools to do that. And so they just, the guys who and girls who were good at whatever they did excelled because the government or their local sports team took them and it was 24/7. I mean, it was freaking 24/7. Mm-hmm. And so when they had the opportunity to come to North America and make some money, I mean, you know, that was probably all those players were like, okay, this is my way out and I can better my life, better my family's life and live this incredible lifestyle. So they had a goal in mind. And I think as a North American kid, especially growing up in Canada, it was just such a dream and honor to play in the NHL. And it was, for me, it wasn't about the money. And when I started, there wasn't a lot, it wasn't a lot of money, not like it is today. So we played because we loved the game and we wanted to be on Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, standing for the anthem, playing for your favorite team and mm-hmm. playing for the Stanley Cup. So two totally different objectives as athletes. But when we all got together, we, you know, were rewarded for our hard work. And it was just, I think our outlook for playing is and was different than right. theirs at that time.
Do you think, Russ, do you think back in your day compared to now with kids in the league, how should I phrase it? Do you think you guys had more respect for coaching than they do now? For some reason, you know, the money's so big. When I think back to those Russian teams, you know, it was like the coach was God, you know? And you talked about their discipline. No one was more disciplined, you know, when the Russians, started coming up through the ranks, with how rigid their existence was. Do you think Russ, there's less respect now for coaching than there was back in those days?
I think we were more scared of the coaches when I played, than they are today. I think that, I've talked to some NHL coaches that are currently coaching and they just said it's so different and how you have to handle the players. And it's almost like soft gloves, you know, versus we were, threatened all the time, you know, threatened to be traded, threatened to be sent to the minors if you were able to be sent to the minors. And so the coaches had a way bigger bat back then than they have today. And players, you know, have no trade contracts. So how can you threaten a player with the no trade contract? But yeah, I just think I got a story about the great Russian coach Tikhonov?
Sure.
So we're playing the Red Army. I'm playing for the Montreal Canadiens. It's 1990, I think, 90 or 91. We had training camp in Sweden and Russia, and we ended our trip with a 5-on-5 brawl. Mike Keane, Shane Corson, Gerald Diddick, I can't remember who else was out there, and they ended up going toe-to-toe with these guys. And Tikhonov stood up, so our benches are side-by-side, right? And I'm standing beside Brian Skrudland, and Tikhonov, you know, he's super famous.
Right.
He's kind of like the Scotty Bowman of Russia at the time.
Sure. Right?
So he stands up on the glass and he's reaching, he's just got his head over the glass yelling at our bench and Pat Burns in Russian. And freaking Brian Skrudland drilled him as hard as he could right in the chops and freaking knocked him right off the glass, right on his ass. I've never seen anything like it in my life. But a friend of mine, Boris Dorochenko, is a famous skating coach. I've talked about him. He coached Austin Matthews and my son Lawton growing up, amongst many, many other NHL players, young players, power skating, and he's from Ukraine. And I told him that story. He couldn't believe it. Like, his eyes were like, he punched him. And I go, yeah.
You go to jail for that in Russia.
Yeah, but he sent me the video of the game, and Pavel Bure played in that game as a young kid.
Right.
But it ended up, the army came down, like the real army, not the hockey players, right, with machine guns. And we had to go off the ice because the fans, yeah, they were throwing vodka bottles and coins at us. And,
Jesus.
Yeah. We went off for, it felt like an hour, but at least a half hour. Well, they cleaned up the building, and then our interpreter and their interpreter talked, and we weren't going to go back on the ice, and we lost in overtime. It's the only game I've ever wanted to lose in my freaking life because it was fucking scary, man. I've never seen anything like it. These guys with machine guns and people throwing bottles at us and coins. It was,
what the hell?
Yeah, it was incredible. And my mom was in the freaking stands. I brought my mom on this trip.
Right.
It's like 10 days in Russia. And she's all dressed in Montreal gear. And all I could think about was my poor mom's up there. And how the hell am I going to get her out of here alive? Because the fans were just going ballistic over this brawl we had. But that's my famous coaching story of Tikhonov.
That's crazy.
I know, and freaking Brian Skrudland. We should get him on one day. He's a great teammate of mine in Montreal and a funny guy. And he just cold cocked him right on his ass.
It's all fun and games, Russ. It's all fun and games until someone shows up with an AK-47.
Yeah. You know, it was scary. Never seen anything like it.
God, that's good. That's nuts, man. Holy God.
Yeah.
But it's the only game I wanted to lose.
Yeah. We're tied 3-3, and we lost 4-3, and they went freaking nuts. And I was like, God, good for them. Let's get out of here.
A reminder, you can follow the Suspendables on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And check out our new website, thesuspendables.ca.
So, Rusty, it's funny you bring that up about it's the only game you wanted to lose. You know, come on, toughen up. It's just a machine gun, Russ, the guy has in your face. Okay? Come on, score a goal.
Yeah.
This will be fine trying to get out of here with the Red Army team. So, the NFL's done, Russ. going into this, they're done the regular season. Playoffs are set up. You know, speaking of wanting to lose games, Russ, the short story, I think, the Eagles are playing. I still call them the Redskins, but they're called the Washington football team now or something like that. I'll never get used to it. And if Washington wins a game, it's big for them. Okay. Philly's out of it. Doesn't matter. The Eagles. They're down by 6 points or something. They pull Hurts, their quarterback, and they bring in this no-name guy, Nate Sudfeld, if that's who it is. Or if that's okay. And the only shot they have to win this game, they're down less than a touchdown, is they got to throw long bombs, Russ. It's less than a minute left. They bring this kid in, and he not only does he not throw a pass, hardly, he's running around. He drops a snap. He runs backwards out of the pocket. He grounds the ball about nine times. So you wake up today and they're saying, well, Philly threw the game. All the sports world is saying that the Eagles throw this game. So they move up from ninth in the draft to sixth, three spots. And I said, that's ridiculous. I've heard that before. People accusing teams of throwing the game. And then when I think back, I look at it and go, why did the guy never throw a long bomb? That's the only choice they had. And I'm going, they threw the game. I think they threw the game. I don't know if you saw it or not.
Oh, saw it. Had money on it.
Oh, there you go. So
Billy Bush went on Instagram after because he's a New Yorker and it screwed the Giants. So he was like, Chris Collins said, who does the color with Al Michaels, said there'll be a lot of no comments in the press in the press conference after from the players.
And those guys they keep their cards pretty close to their chest. They're not very controversial, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. But Chris Collinsworth said, I don't know what they're doing here. I would never have done this to bring this kid in. So it all adds up to they threw the game. And the issue now is, how do you avoid that? What can you do?
Well, that's why the NHL started the lottery with the draft. Sure. Because, you know, Mario Lemieux, look at Pittsburgh's record the year they drafted Mario Lemieux after, you know, to get the first pick overall. I mean, they were starting freaking ushers in goal. And they were so bad and the players knew it. So they just were like losing every game. I think I have a feeling they lost 65 games that year or something. But, you know, the NHL had to create the lottery system for that exact reason.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize, I wasn't even thinking about the draft when you start talking about this, because I'm still licking my wounds from the bet.
Right.
And what a joke. I mean, it was such Mike Shanahan and I were betting games together. Just, it's so much fun. We're like, day of the game, what are we doing? What are we doing? And
the football coach?
Yeah. No, the Mike Shanahan from St. Louis, his dad used to own the,
Okay. Yeah.
The St. Louis Blues, but you know, we don't bet a lot of money, but we're just doing it and we're having fun with it. And we bet the second half and it was like, are you kidding me? I mean, they're not even trying.
Right.
And I was just on, I kept thinking about the Giants, like they're just, the Eagles are screwing the Giants, but I never thought about the draft. I never thought about it till you just said it.
Right.
Now that makes sense to me that they were trying to move up in the draft.
Yeah. But you can't have people throwing games, Russ.
No, I know they're probably going to get in trouble this because the Giants aren't going to let it go. I mean, they would have been in the playoffs. They could have been in the playoffs if they, you know, if they Eagles won. So they're not going to let it go. I mean, and Washington, they're going to let it go because they're in, because they had to win to get in. So you got two teams, one's happy, one's pissed off. And then you got a bunch of fans and can you imagine the casinos, like the bookies? I mean,
all that
really screwed them up.
Yeah, I've never been on the winning end of any of those. I've got a million.
You couldn't pick a winner today with tomorrow's newspaper.
I know. That's true. The cooler, they call me. One of my favorite betting stories, Rusty, is a guy sitting at the bar, and he's by himself. He's having a couple of scotches, and there's a guy you know, next to him, who he doesn't know, and the guy's on his phone. And this one guy's listening to the guy on the phone, right? And the guy's going, okay, what do you got on the Dolphins game? Okay, give me the Dolphins for five, less the points, okay? Minus five. Okay, what about the other game? Yeah. Okay, give me Buffalo plus two. Throw another nickel on that. Give me one more game. Okay, I'll take the Rams, okay? They're even? Yeah, okay, I'll take the Rams for 1,000. And he hangs up the phone, and the guy had heard all this, and he says, hey, what are you doing? He goes, I'm betting. I'm betting on, he goes, on what? Yeah, the NFL, all the games this weekend. He goes, well, how does that work? He says, well, you know, there's a bookie, and you put a bet down, and if you win, you win, and if you lose, you got to just pay 10%. You know, if you bet $100, if you lose, you got to pay 110, you know, and that's how it works. And the guy goes, oh my God, I'm a former football player, man. Okay. You got to hook me up with this guy. I know football inside and out. I played my whole life, you know? And he says, okay. So he hooks him up with the guy, and the guy starts to lose. Okay. Yeah. And he goes 0-3 the first weekend. Next week, he can't catch a bet. Okay. He bets four games, loses all those, on and on and on every single week. You know, the guy's brutal. And he's back at the bar, and that guy's there, you know, at the end of the season. And he's going, okay, what do you got on the football this week? And the guy goes, there's nothing. It's over. And he goes, you got to have something. There's got to be something. No, college is all done. You know, what, the Pro Bowl? You know, Pro Bowl was last week. He goes, anything. A high school game, something. He goes, no, we got nothing. Nothing, man. There's no football. It's all done. He says, I'll tell you what, though. There's some hockey on. And the guy says, hockey? I know fuck all about hockey.
And?
Well, that's the joke. Like, he's talking like he knew football. He never won a game. And then he says, I got a hockey game. And the guy says, I can't bet hockey. I don't know anything about it.
Oh, God. That's a bad fucking...
How did you not get that?
I was asleep.
Stop it. anyway, what's the penalty, Russ? What's the penalty for throwing a game?
Yeah, I know. Well, we're going to find out, because I don't think...
What would you do?
Well, if it's cheating. I mean, if you freaking cheated and they get rewarded for cheating, that they should take that reward away. That's what they should do. They shouldn't allow them to move from 9th to 6th. And then the poor, you can't do anything about the Giants now, because... you know, or maybe you give the Giants their draft pick, you switch them. So that way you screw, I don't know where the Giants pick. Yeah. Let's say they were 15th, give the Eagles their pick at 15 and they get to move to 6.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Severe penalty though. You can't do this shit.
No.
You see it in baseball all the time, right? The teams are 1,000 games back. And now what do you got left, you know, the rest of the year? I always thought they should have split seasons, you know, do them in two halves in baseball, because it's too many games, right? And football, there's not enough games to do that against. But anyway, we'll have to see what happens. I don't think it's going to go away.
You got any more jokes?
You know what? You're just a moron if you didn't get that joke. It's very funny, okay? It's very funny. Anyway,
you're like my brother Jeff. He starts off a joke and he goes, this is the greatest joke you'll ever hear. And I'm like, fuck, it better be, because you just told everybody how good it was.
That's right. Yeah. And by the way, I'll be the judge of that if it's the greatest joke. Yeah, we'll decide. A couple of shout outs, Rusty. We got talking about juniors. I want to we got one of the questions we put on our website and our Facebook page was, where are you listening from? And there's people are listening from all over the world. It was really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. They're listening from all over the place. It's just fantastic. Including, I want to give a shout out to my old locker partner in Sudbury. When I was in grade 7 was Peter DiPietro. We played playground hockey together. He might've gone on. He was a better hockey player than I was. He might've gone on to bigger things. And his mom and dad, Frank and Kathy DiPietro, who I sort of grew up with, obviously. They live in Sudbury. Nice. And they've got a son who got drafted by the Sudbury Wolves, the junior team. And Giordano Biondi, and so they're all excited about him. But I know they're going to listen to this show, and so I want to say hello to them. There's a bunch of others. I may have done this last week to say hello to Holly Camden and Dave Hemming, Daniel LeDuc, Perry Blanchard is my buddy, lives in Cornwall, Craig Marlowe, Janice Bramhill. And if I'm doing this again, you're really lucky. You're getting two shout outs. Anyway, Rusty, speaking of coaching, James Duthie, who everyone would know, watches TSN. He's been doing it his whole life. He's a host for them, and hockey's his prime deal for sure. He's written a book. He came up with a book about hockey stories from untold stories. It's called Beauties. You know, that guy's a beauty, as Don Cherry used to say. And one of the great, I've been reading the book, and one of the great stories, I've never heard of this. It's called Milbury's Solo Bag Skate. Okay. And it talks about Dave Poulin and the Bruins get a lesson in unconventional coaching. Well, I'll just read you what this guy did. You would have a million stories about coaches, but he's talking about the guys who aren't, they think they're going to get bag skated. Mm-hmm. He says, no one's going home. I've got the ice for 2 hours. You're not going back to the hotel. Everyone show up at the rink. And he says, I booked it for 3 hours each for the next 2 days. I could crush you, but I don't think physical conditioning is your problem. There's some other things that are really bugging me though. So today I'm going to go one by one and tell each of you what's bothering me. And I'm going to skate for you, he says. And we're all thinking, what the fuck is this guy talking about? So he starts with Lyndon Byers, one of the toughest.
LB.
LB, okay. One of the toughest players in the NHL. Milbury stands directly in front of him, and he says, I absolutely love what you've brought to this team. You have a chance to be one of the best tough guys in the NHL because you can actually play a little bit. But you've got to figure out when to fight and when not to fight, when it hurts the team and when it doesn't. And by the way, you're in the bars way too much. So I'm going to go over and back twice for you. He's talking about skating. Mm-hmm. And he skates as hard as he can. This is Milbury, back and forth across the ice. Mike's a former pro athlete, but he's already breathing hard, and he keeps going right down the line, skating back and forth for every single guy. He got to the next guy. You know, says 3 weeks ago, we traded for the captain of the Philadelphia Flyers, and we're in Hartford. I've never seen our locker room so excited. And some nights you've been our best player, but other nights your head is back in Philly. You're not a Flyer anymore, okay? You don't wear the orange and black. You're wearing the gold and black. When you decide there's a Bruins logo on your jersey, we may have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And for that, I'm going to skate for you. And back and forth he goes. I thought that was just a fantastic story. I know you got lots of stories about coaches, but what a cool thing that the guy did.
Well, at least he did one cool thing.
You don't like Milbury?
No, I don't like him at all.
Why? I'm glad I brought this up.
Well, I was having a career year in Montreal, and I was all excited. The media told me I was going to go to the All-Star game, and he didn't pick me. And so it's a little personal against him. Like, I feel a little, but I found him to be, like, I'd listened to what he had to say, and some nights, I thought, okay, but just where he had a chance to be a GM with some great, great teams and traded away a lot of great players. And then he got in the media and just some of the things he says, I just shake my head, but I'm not a big Mike Milbury fan. My brother played with him and he likes him. Jeff and Mike were teammates. And, I've heard a couple other things I can't verify about what kind of guy he was. So I would, but my personal thing, the way he coached, he was one of those coaches is yelling at players. Like, he felt like he was still playing at scene,
Right.
Like, most coaches don't scream at players. And he was one of those coaches that would like challenge players. Like, we're going to kick your ass. And that's a funny story. Pat Burns was going to bag skate us in Montreal. And we got dressed and we had to take the bus to Verdun to our practice rink. When the Montreal Forum was being used, we always went over there to practice. And it was maybe 15-minute bus ride. And it was funny. We'd all get dressed, put skate guards on, and we'd walk out, and we charter a public bus, you know,
right.
Regular city bus. So there'd be the Montreal Canadiens going over to Verdun to practice. And he got there and he stood up. We're all like thinking we're going to get bag skated. And he went, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just go back to the rink. And we never skated. So we got dressed in our gear, went all the way over there and then all the way back. And we just freaking loved him. Like we were like, yes, yes. It was better than him bag skating us. It was like, okay, we got to play harder, man.
Yeah, so it's funny, Russ, you bring up this thing about Milbury. You didn't like it. You took it personal. Because you always hear in the sports world, trades are a big part of it. Whether you get drafted or not, whether you get traded or not, whether you get picked to play in the first line, whether you get cut, whether you get scratched, whether you get benched during a game. And everyone will say, well, you can't take any of this stuff personally. Okay? It's just the big business of sports, right? And I'm saying, well, no, every trade I've ever heard of, they take it personally. Yeah. And this is a story. The Columbus Blue Jackets re-signed their top center, Pierre-Luc Dubois, on Thursday, inking him to a two-year, $10 million deal. He had a good playoff last year. In the first round, Columbus played Toronto, and they beat him. And the guy racked up, I don't know, 9 or 10 points. The signing came a few hours after reports started to pop up that Dubois has a desire for a change in scenery and wants to be traded.
Ooh.
Okay, after signing this, the 22-year-old still prefers to be dealt, a source close to the situation told TFP on Friday, echoing reports. The Athletics, Aaron, I don't know who wrote this, indicated contract negotiations changed the relationship between the two parties and conversation with other teams over a potential offer sheet left Dubois with added motivation to move on from Columbus. I fucking hate this story, Russ. Okay. I was saying earlier today to Stevie, we were shooting the shit talking on the Ottawa podcast. And if I was the commissioner of the NHL, Russ, when I hear a guy who just signed a $10 million deal, okay, at 22 or 3 years old, starting to hack on another team saying, I want out. You know, I don't, the relationship broke down during this negotiation. And so I'm not being treated fairly and I want to be traded. And, you know, if I ran that league, Russ, I would step in there going, you know what? You are shutting your mouth about hacking on the league and hacking on being treated unfairly, particularly today, Russ, with the pandemic. But what do you think of that, Russ? I think it's a spoiled, rotten, self-entitled athlete who's making so much dough in the greatest league in the world, as you've always said, and to come forward and start to chop a team who just signed him to a big deal and then speak, you know, disparagingly about him. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And do they have the right to do that, Rusty, or what are your thoughts there?
You know who, okay. First of all, now that he has a contract, maybe he's tradable because the other teams know. So there's that factor, right? You can't trade. It's hard to trade somebody who hasn't signed yet.
Right.
I went public when I was 26 or 7 to get traded. And it was a mistake. And I regret it. I have a few regrets. But the biggest regret I have is that I went public and wanted to be traded out of Montreal. And it put the team in a bad position. It put me in a bad position. And it was immaturity. I chalk it up to, you know, fatherless kid. And I made that decision on my own. I talked to one person about it and it was just not a good decision. So anytime you go publicly and say something like that, the reactions are probably going to be similar to yours but it's the kid's 23 years old. Like my son's turning 25 in March. I mean,
right.
Freaking young, but they're right. Young. And those mistakes, that you make and they become big news, or they hurt, and they tend to hurt the person making the statement,
right,
or the hockey team. So it's unfortunate that he couldn't have kept that behind closed doors with the GM and just said what he said to him and to the coach. And yeah, I want to get out of here. And then if they leak it, that's their fault. But he, my advice to him would have been, go tell them, but don't go public.
Shut your face, man.
Yeah, it's not good. And I've lived it. And I'm 55 and it's 30 years, 28 years ago I did it, and I still think about it. So the only thing I don't like about your comment is the money, because I just think the money doesn't matter. Like, it's, you just shouldn't have done it. Whether he was
in the big picture, though.
For yeah, a guy I know, be. But he's not complaining about the money. He's complaining about the team.
Well, but saying he's treated unfairly, Russ?
He probably thinks he deserves
it. How unfair the whole world is for you right now.
No, but there's other guys signing 6 and 7 year deals and 5 year deals, and he's got a 2 year deal. That's probably why he's pissed off. Because they didn't make the commitment long term to him. I'm just guessing. You're bringing this to me for the first time. So
yeah,
unfairly, it sounds like financially. I mean, it sounds like they didn't give him what he wanted, and so he signed a 2 year deal. So when he says unfairly, it's probably the terms.
I guess. Sorry about the $10 million over two. Sorry about that. Yeah. You know what? We got to give our head a shake here. And this is preposterous how unfairly we fucked up. You're not going to. Yeah, I'm really sorry about that. Rusty, a few questions. Some of these I think we went over this last week, but people are getting used to me repeating ourselves. Did we ask you about the scariest player you ever played against?
Yep.
Who was it?
I said Chris King.
Oh, okay.
And he wasn't the toughest, but he was just freaking dirty.
What do you want to be remembered for, Rusty, by the fans and by your teammates?
Who said, is that a question or is that you?
Yes. What would you like? What do you want to be remembered for by the fans and by your teammates?
Well, I love the game, and I really love my teammates. I'm so blessed to be able to have played that game for 16 years. All I have from hockey. So I don't know. I just think that I enjoyed every minute of it. Looking back, there's some down times when you're not playing as well and stuff. But as far as looking back on my career, I just proud that I got to play that great game and making a living and lasting memories doing it.
What game are you going to show your grandkids, Rusty, out of your career? What one game?
Probably my breakout game against Detroit in, I think it was November 23rd, 1986, something like that. It was, I scored 3 goals and 3 assists, and that was a big accomplishment, and it was that game that really set me on my way, and I felt like, okay, now I belong here. And I, up until that point, it was kind of back and forth, but that would be a game that I would show my kids.
Cool. What story is out there, Rusty, that people tell about you that isn't true?
Oh God. Well,
that's from our buddy, Jean-Luc.
Yeah. Jean-Luc.
Yeah.
Oh, Jean-Luc.
Jean-Luc Saint-Ange. Yeah. From,
I don't know. Probably because I haven't heard any.
Yeah. He doesn't drink.
Not much.
Yeah, not much.
I don't drink anymore, and I don't drink any less.
Yeah, don't drink any less. Yeah. I don't have a drinking problem. I drink, I fall down, I get up, I drink again. No problem.
My Maui dad, Pard Erdman, I'm in Maui one night. I'm at his house, and my buddy Mike Cameron's there from Alberta, from Calgary, and he's staying with me. And so we're over there for dinner. I go, hey, Pard, would you like a drink? And he goes, oh, Russ, you know I don't drink, but fill up my glass, please. But sure, fill up my glass, something like that. Mike Cameron, every time I see Mike, he's like, he just recites that. Well, you know, Russ, I don't drink, but fill up my glass.
Yeah, it's
sure,
like
I'll have one.
It's like the guy going to the bar at 10 in the morning, you know, and the bartender says, you'll have a beer. And the guy goes, no, no, man, it's only 10. You know, he says, but I'll have a drink while I wait till noon. Here's one of my favorites, Rusty. The husband says to his wife, he goes, I've got a bag full of used clothing here I'd like to donate. And the wife says, well, why not just throw it in the trash? That's much easier. The husband says, yeah, but there are poor, starving people who can really use all these clothes. And the wife says, honey, anyone who fits into your clothing is not starving. another show in the books, folks, of The Suspendables. Drop us a line, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. I think I have that right. Steve will correct me if I... No, that's the email address. Finally, I got it right. thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Check out our website, thesuspendables.ca. We've got our shop button on there with a bunch of merch. I'm getting pictures from people. I'm going to put them up on the website. Our merchandise, Russ, ended up in Dubai from TED. My friend Terry is over there, and he's wearing the stuff. He's going to send us a picture. So you get on there. All the shows are on the website and everything. So we thank you all for tuning in. And you've been listening to Russ Courtnell, longtime super duper star from the NHL. There, that'll fix up your buddies, Russ. I'm Jungle Jim Jerome. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Suspendables. Take it easy, Rusty.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.